Reset, the podcast, is brought to you in association with Liars, the non-alcoholic spirits brand. Whether it's low alcohol or no alcohol, Liars helps you enjoy your classic favourite cocktails.
Hello everyone, my name is Suki Thompson. Welcome to Reset, the podcast. A place for you to get some inspiration and advice to help you live a more fulfilling work life. I do hope that your journey to feel more connected, more inspired, just a bit more energized starts here. Take a moment now with me to reset.
In this latest Reset the Podcast, I turn the tables on two people who have a podcast of their own. I was delighted back in the summer to be a guest on the Places We'll Go show, which is hosted by two of the most prominent names in marketing. Mark Evans, the MD of Marketing and Digital at Direct Line Group, and Richie Mehta, the CEO of the School of Marketing. I was delighted this time to be able to chat to them both about their journeys, about their own resets, and their view that life is rarely ever a straight line. From Richie's journey to Scotland, aged 14, from the hustle and bustle of Mumbai, to Mark's light bulb moment in a curry house in Nottingham. They are resets that will both inspire and make you think, because that's what both my guests this week do best. They make you think about some of life's most important questions. What is purpose? How are careers really built? And in Mark's case, why being made redundant four times has been the catalyst for one of the most prominent careers in marketing. I know you're going to love listening to this podcast.
Hi, Mark and Richie. How are you both today?
Hey, Suki. I'm great. Looking forward to this.
Yeah, me too, Suki. All good at this end.
Brilliant. Well, you know, I'm very excited. I don't normally have two guests, so it's lovely having both of you. And this must be feel a bit weird because normally the two of you are together when you're on your brilliant Friday morning broadcast called The Places That We'll Go. And we'll talk a little bit about that later on. But, you know, I know both of you as, you know, really integral people within the marketing world. And we're going to talk today a little bit about what makes you you. You both do the podcast as well as a number of other things very much because it gives you a sense of purpose. And I think for me, when I think about both of you, you have that really strong sense of purpose. So I think perhaps that's where we'll start. Mark, you tell a lovely story from as you were coming out of your childhood. You have a lovely story that then sort of helps you have a North Star in some ways for the rest of your life. Can you tell us that story?
Yeah, I'd love to, Suki. Firstly, yeah, it's slightly strange the tables being turned, but we're still hunting in packs, Richie and I, so we're all good. But delighted to be on here. Yeah, I mean, this was probably the biggest pivot moment into my career. I've told the story a few times. Richie's probably heard it ad nauseum, but anyway, hopefully it still works. But it was on the night of my graduation, where we went out for a fairly low rent curry in Nottingham city centre, and the meal itself probably would have gone unnoticed or not remembered. Typically, it would be the graduation ceremony, which is the most memorable part of a graduation day, I suppose. But anyway, it did turn out to be so for one very specific moment, which is when my best friend's father, Pete, asked if he could say a few words. And trust me, it wasn't really that sort of place where you would chink champagne glasses and say some really profound words. Anyway, he asked to say these words. We thought it was a bit odd, but we let him run with it. And we shouldn't have worried because it was a fabulous set of words. And it turns out he's a really great speaker. And this is what he said, which is that he said he was jealous because from this position, he thought we could achieve anything in the world. But at the same time, he said, I pity you. And the reason I pity you is because for the next 20 years, you'll go in search of success. And then after those 20 years, when sadly, maybe the best years of your career are behind you, you'll realize it's not about success. It's about significance. But the really smart people figure out how to achieve success and significance simultaneously. And so I'm not going to lie, we'd all had a few beers, but it was a moment that stuck and haunted all of us in a good way. But when we get together again, we can remember that conversation very vividly. And I think it helped all of us to make some different decisions. And it's not the exact wording of my purpose, which I'm going to come on to, but it's pretty close. And the key thing there is it's the and. And I think that really frames a lot of my thinking about everything, actually, that there's always a cunning plan which allows you to find that sweet spot in the Venn diagram. It's the and. And, you know, I suppose ultimately I'm an optimist. And I think that speech resonated with me because I was always that way, but actually accelerated that view on the world as well.
And have you spoken to, what's Pete's dad called?
So Matt's dad is Pete Elsermann.
Oh, sadly, Matt's dad is Pete.
Sadly, he's now passed away, but there is a bit of a circularity about this story, which is that in 2016, when I first did the Sprintathon, which was really one of my best examples of success and significance. So yes, it's breaking world marathon records, but it's towards beating cancer faster, raising money for standard cancer. Anyway, he was there at the first one, because Matt was there with his family. They ran a lap of the circuit of the track, and midway through, unbeknown to me, my wife Lorna, who was also there at that meal, wandered over to Pete and said, "You must be really proud." And he looked at Lorna and he said, "Sorry, Lorna, I've got absolutely no idea what you're talking about. I mean, I'm really proud that Matt's and his family are running a lap, and you know, no, don't you get it, Pete? This is all because of you." And he said, "Honestly, completely lost me." He said, "Don't you remember that speech in the Curry House all those years ago, which was 17 years ago? This is Mark's thing in terms of success and significance." And so slightly sad in a way, because he's now passed away. But there's a lovely circularity. The thing is, he hadn't even realized the impact of his words until 17 years later. And I think that's, again, a salutary lesson in terms of, you know, the payback for some of these things, doing good in the world, is sometimes invisible, but it's there.
Wow. I love that story. That's amazing. And actually, I think it says something about you, Mark, that you took those words for so long and you never went back to him and said, "Look, I'm doing all this because of you." That's, you know, I always think of you as a very understated person who actions always speak louder than perhaps your words. And I think that's amazing. Thank you. Richie, what about you? What is there a moment from your childhood or early adulthood that's made a really big impact on your life?
Wow, it's a big question, Suki, and I don't have a consolidated answer like Mark in terms of a story. But interestingly, by the way, I think that story in itself had a pivotal awakening moment for me, perhaps slightly later on in my career, which I'm sure we can talk about in a bit. But it was very much the moment in Offside that Mark recited that story back to us. And I genuinely, that moment, knew it was time to move on from my role that I was doing and change the course of what I was doing. So actually, it has had a profound impact on my life as well in a very direct way. So it's an interesting moment, and it's great to rehear that story, Mark. But I guess if I take it up to slightly more macro in terms of a few key pivotal or a moment in time in my life, probably when I was about 14, when I left India. So I'm half Indian, half Scottish, mixed race. And my mom and dad were separating, and my mom was taking me, my brother, back to a small little village. So Mumbai, where I grew up, was a city of about 20 million people. And I was about to go to a village which had less than 2,000. And it was an incredible moment where I genuinely, you know, probably lost a lot of touch with my dad. There were some moments when I hadn't seen him in 2 years. I also went from being slightly the cool kid in the school in Mumbai to being the odd one out in rural Scotland, not knowing head nor tail about what it was all about. And I think that had some profound, so sort of almost kind of losing touch with my dad on a daily basis and moving to the extreme of, on the one hand, what Mumbai's called as maximum city, and on the other, into sort of farmland in rural Scotland. Had incredible sort of, incredible sort of learnings and moments of reflection in my life. And especially where, you know, I had a really great group of friends, and at 14, I lost all of that to then go to a place where I knew nobody, knew nothing, didn't know the culture. In fact, in Mumbai, it was relatively Americanized, and I used to sort of wear my trousers almost down to my knees, sort of that kind of cool kind of vibe going on. And then in Scotland, you know, you probably couldn't do that because you had to run away from the people who were trying to chase you down the street. So I wouldn't be a very fast runner doing that, by doing that. So it was many, many key learnings that I had there, but it was very much a moment where I had to grow up. And I remember my first job at 16 was at Wicks Timber Supplies. I was on £3.03 an hour. And, you know, that was a Saturday job, which I had to do to get a bit of pocket money in order to have a McDonald's and go to the cinema. But all those kind of things were and it probably made me much more responsible and made me think about a life that I wanted, as opposed to think and knowing that I had to grab it with both hands, as opposed to let life kind of lead me down a path. And I think that's what was really helpful in some of those early stage developments, and perhaps maybe fed into, you know, what's gone on to be.
Yeah, gosh, that's you know, it's, I was talking to Sherry Crammond a few weeks ago, and she grew up in Glasgow in a really tough environment. And you know, I had such a lovely childhood on the beach down in Cornwall that when I hear stories like this, Richie, it's so extraordinary the path you've gone to end up where you are. And perhaps we'll come and talk a little bit later about maybe that's some of the reason why you do the things for so many different people that, you know, wouldn't be able to do it without the help and support that you give them. Gosh, thank you for that. Did you have brothers and sisters with you as well?
I did, yes. I had an elder brother, Robin, who really did become a bit of a pivotal pillar, I would say, in my early life. And we're still very close today. Although entirely different, probably chalk and cheese in thought process and mentality. From the experience, Robin became a true solid entrepreneur. And I went down a slightly more academic-y type of route, both very successful in our own rights. But, you know, maybe that's sort of helped me carve out sort of school of marketing and the trajectory there, given my geekiness in the field, whilst he's gone on to do lots more practical orientated things.
Wow. I mean, that I think really leads us very nicely into the second point, which is, you know, the podcast is called Reset. It's all about resets. Mark, do you have a sort of defining career reset for you where you thought, this is something that's happened to me that's made you go off in a different direction?
Yeah, there's been a number. Actually, I just need to reflect on the fact that Richie left after what was supposed to be a rousing speech, left to go his own way from where we were back then. But no regrets, because he's gone on to amazing things, which we'll come on to. The biggest reset was probably being made redundant from the first job that I never had. Now, that takes a little bit of unpacking. I had a milk round job after university that I deferred for a year. And during that year, the company I was going to work for was involved in a merger. And my graduate job actually disappeared in a puff of smoke. So I never actually even joined. In fact, I never even set foot in the building because it was all milk round stuff. And so I was destined for a career in finance that literally never happened, not even a day one, which was a bit of a kick, because that's what I'd been betting on. Truth be known, I probably was saved from something that maybe I wasn't 100% wired for. I don't know. We'll never know. But nonetheless, you know, all bets were off. And so I had to really go back to the drawing board. And many people listening to this will have been made redundant or been very close to somebody who has. And it's, they say, don't worry, it's not personal. But of course it's personal. I mean, it's, in theory, it's the role, not the individual. But particularly the last time I was made redundant, when I told my 8-year-old daughter, you know, well, it's, you know, it's not me, it's the role. She said, "What, Daddy? They just don't want you anymore." Then, yeah, about that. So I think that the first one was the hardest, and it sort of gets easier. But the gift is the forced pivot, and it would, none of the things that I've done would have happened, but for that sliding doors moment. And in those tough moments, of course, you learn, you build resilience. Resilience is easy to get conceptually, but it's only really acquired through difficulty and hardship. And you work out what your value is, what you really want to do, what you don't want to do. And so I wouldn't change anything from my four redundancies. It's probably not, you know, something to plan for.
Four?
Well, yeah, because I'm the most loyal person I know. I've never got to resign. I've always been made redundant before that eventuality. But all as a result of restructurings or mergers and acquisitions, all that sort of stuff. So it just goes to show that nobody is indispensable. But equally, sometimes things happen for a reason. And I always feel like I've landed jam side up.
So lovely. And landed jam size, that's a great thing. And you know, we do talk about resilience, and I think it's one of those things, as you say, we always go, you know, in hindsight it was the best, and you know, but How do you handle those moments at that time, Mark? How do you behave? Is there a stop where you go like, this is really awful, I'm going to do these things and then I get through it and then I can, you know, get on with my life?
I think two things, not to overcomplicate it. One is just, I'm not going to swear, but just get really determined. You know, it sort of brings out the best in you. And the other is, of course, you know, apart from the first one where I could hop back into a milk round just a couple of years on, having spent 10 years at Mars, of course, it's a headhunter dominated market. And so you do get the support and advice. You know, I never felt like I was left floundering. And as I said, it just sort of brings out the best in you in terms of being focused and clarifying your thinking about what you want to do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do you know what? As somebody who has just been voted one of the top 100 marketeers by Marketing Week, I think everyone listening will go, wow, I can't imagine anyone making Mark Evans redundant. So it's great that you can talk about that story, because I'm sure it is something that pretty much everyone goes through. But it's good to hear that even the best marketeers in the UK can, you know, have to move on from jobs at different times when perhaps they don't want to. Richie, what about you? Well, have you got you've started with a massive reset moment, actually, you know, ending up in Scotland from Mumbai. What about you from a career perspective? Has it been a big reset moment?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a moment I can recall. I think the thing for me is careers are always made based on the people that you meet and the people that you build strong relationships with. And I genuinely had, back in the day, probably applied for hundreds of jobs, which I'm sure many people have, all of which are truly unsuccessful. And yet the moments where you kind of have those little elevations in your career always came for me from people who I knew who trusted in me to do a good job. And I think that's really important. And that's the kind of the precursor to my big reset moment. And Mark probably, I don't know if you probably remember this or not, just like as you talked about Pete, but the precursor being, I used to basically be in Mark's team twice, at HSBC and then at Direct Line. And then it was at Direct Line that I one day sort of asked Mark to have a bit of a chat, as you normally do. And Mark was into this thing where you had to walk and talk. That was his gig. And we ended up on Bromley Hill at that time. And I kind of said, Mark, you know, I love the fact that we're working together, but I think my time is up in this organization. And it was a few weeks after that pivotal conference, as I talked about. Not that I could have mentioned this to Mark at the time. And I said, and he says, okay, so what is it that you're looking to do in life? And I said, well, I really want to create a business school. That was sort of my soul and goal, was kind of telling me to kind of go into a different way and a different path. And joining up the dots, I'd acquired 4 degrees, done every type of sort of full-time, part-time distance learning you can think of. And I was definitely the guy to help look after all the youngins coming in and set up competitions for the young people and really want to kind of help them succeed within the organization. And I think it was at that moment that I feel that I need to go down a very, very different path to the corporate world that I was used to and take that massive leap and risk in, you know, to be able to achieve that. I dare say, and I guess to end the segment, it took me 6 years post that conversation to launch the School of Marketing. Wow. And I think that there's something really important in that thought, where people tend to, a lot of people I speak to in the corporate world feel that they want to start up and do something different and go it their own way. And yet actually it's far harder, far more challenging, far more, you know, a pain in the whatever to be able to achieve. And I think that's my key reflection there, that actually the moment was set, the die was cast, but actually to actually get on that right path took a lot longer than I'd ever envisaged.
Yeah, always takes longer and always harder. But, you know, people like you, Richie, it's extraordinary, isn't it? The number of people who, as you say, want to do their own thing, want to start something, want to make something happen. And what I really think defines people is the people that actually do it and the people that talk about it. I just need to ask you a couple of very quick questions related to that. So what were your 4 degrees in, Richie?
Oh, God. Well, I actually started my first degree in Edinburgh. I started doing law, but I soon changed, realizing it was too difficult. And I ended up sort of changing my degree 5 times for my first one. but I ended up getting a degree in business studies. I then went on to HSBC, where they made me do another degree in finance. I ended up then going to Cambridge to do a degree in strategy and innovation. And then finally, I did my MBA from Warwick.
Wow. Okay, that's thank you for that. Thank you for that. And then when you first met, and then Mark, I'm going to ask the other way around in a second as well. When you first met Mark, what did you think of him? What three or four words would you use to describe him?
Oh, I thought he was a cool guy, actually. And I must say, I actually came into his team at a pretty important time in my life when I was pretty much down in the dumps. I just got back from Cambridge doing a stint at HSBC, and I ended up probably getting a role with a boss that I wasn't too fond of, let's just say. And I was thinking about leaving the bank. And actually, I was presented with an opportunity to go from commercial banking into marketing, which was in Mark's team. And it was only then that I really feel at home. So beyond the fact that Mark embraced everybody in his team and certainly did the same for me, I think it was a real moment where it was kind of a fork in the road. And it just, and amazingly, it ended me in a space that I'm so passionate about now. So in many ways, a fantastic moment in time. So.
Oh, thank you for that. Mark, how would you describe Richie when you first met him?
Well, Richie hasn't changed a jot in my eyes. There's always a glint in his eye. There's like a tigerishness. Is it very interesting to hear you talk about Robin being the entrepreneurial one, because you're my sort of go-to reference point in terms of somebody who's entrepreneurial. But I think you were support the very first time I met you. I think it was like a graduate evening or something. Maybe you were involved in organizing it. And same old things from what I remember. You know, you were busy, you were on it, fast paced, looking to move things along. And I think that's your character through and through.
Yeah, nice. Mark. Lovely. Mark, one of the things you've done beyond building really amazing teams, and actually probably a very integral part of it, way before I think most businesses were thinking about the importance of mental health, well-being, how it links to performance, you began to focus on that, and not just focus and talk about it, but actually begin to put programs into both marketing and then into Direct Line, I think, was where you first started it. Tell me a bit about what drove you to even think about that and the kind of journey that you've been on.
So it's an interesting one, actually, because I think the Direct Line, it's a big company, but it's a new company. It was only formed in 2012 as an enforced IPO on the back of RBS being saved by the government. And so it has a lot of stature, but it's also a freshness. And in 2012, we created a new set of values, and they were all quite obvious things like aim higher and take ownership. But there was one that was a bit left field, which was to bring all of yourself to work, which now everyone sort of yawn, that's a cliche, we've heard it all before. But that in 2012, that meant we were talking about diversity and inclusion before D&I or DEI or DE&I were even coined, really, as terms. So we were unknowingly quite far ahead of the pack. And I think, interestingly, my view is that as a consequence of being in quite a hostile, quite a nasty corporate culture environment that RBS was, Direct Line almost went the other way and created a culture which was the antithesis, which was pretty nice, pretty caring, and still is to that day. So I think that's the backdrop. I guess why do I tune into that conversation? And I don't know, actually. I suppose, there have been a fair few mental health issues in my family, immediate and extended. And so I just think you're sort of wired for this stuff, or you're not, in a way. And so, yeah, we have done, and not just all in marketing, frankly, but every team has a mental health first aider. And that's been particularly helpful through the lockdown periods. We do monitor and measure well-being in parallel to the normal engagement surveys. And I think one of the things that gets called out in our engagement surveys is the strength of line managers, which is, it's through the line that a lot of these conversations start, even if it's to signpost to the right places. So, yeah, I just think it's just part of being a decent human being in many ways. And in fact, the a lot of people get very angry about inequality and the lack of diversity and inclusion. And I think it all comes from the same space of, there's a right way, and it often doesn't transpire.
Yeah, it's so interesting, isn't it? And you know, I think one of the things that people say to me most about you is you're a very empathetic leader. You are, you know, you are for many very inspirational, but you have a sense of empathy. Do you think you get that, particularly when you talked a little bit about your family, that, you know, I think we all have families that perhaps have, there's always something in a family that runs along, and there's always somebody that has, that's kind of struggles a bit more than others. But I wonder, has that helped you understand people?
I honestly, it all comes from rugby. Well, not all, but a lot of it, as in rugby captaincy is a humble form of leadership. Doesn't make all the decisions, doesn't get all the glory. And I subsequently read a book by Sam Walker called Captain Class, which figures out what the best 16 sports teams in the world ever statistically. And the unifying thing is not that they had loads of money or the best player or the best coach. It's that they had, it was the character of the leader. And that talked to, again, a form of rugby captaincy. So works very hard to set a standard of work ethic for others. In sports terms, is prepared to wash out the showers and clean the changing rooms, which is what New Zealand rugby, they do. You know, the senior players clean up after everybody else, and so on. So, I mean, I just think that I love rugby as a game. It's instilled a lot in me, but not least that rugby captaincy is very in tune with the notion of servant leadership.
That's really interesting. What team did you captain?
Well, my county and Bristol Colts, and had England trials and been the university first 15, and I played for English University. So I was very fortunate to play with lots of great players, including two who went on to win the Rugby World Cup in 2003.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, that was always my thing.
Do you know what? Do you know when I said understated? Literally, Mark, I've never known anyone just kind of brush off the, particularly sports and particularly men. Usually it's the first thing they tell you about, not the thing as you go through. That's brilliant. Sorry, Richie, you were going to say something.
No, look, I just think that, you know, Mark articulates his head position extremely well, but I think he tends to forget his heart position in these things too. And actually, I've probably known Mark some of the longest. Even your friends probably have known you, Mark, in going over a decade now at least in that. And I think what characterizes Mark and what he does is his leadership. I think clearly extraordinary, strategic and logical when he and commercial when he needs to be. But what I love about him is the way that he's so giving. You know, he gives it in, you know, in a very unstructured way, right? I mean, you know, we shoot the breeze all the time, whether it's jokes on WhatsApp, just nuggets going through back and forth. And even to the point where, you know, he gives people time to help and counsel them when they need it most. And I think that's thoroughly important. In fact, I remember, you know, you accusing yourself of being quite paternal, Mark, to one of our colleagues the other day. And I think that's true. Right? You come at it from a very pure place of actually just wanting to be a good person. And all of this other stuff, just like good marketing, is post-rationalized. But I think ultimately it comes from a place of just actually, you know, I want to be a good person in the world and do the right things. And then from there, filters, done.
It's absolutely reciprocated.
Oh, this is nice. This is a big loving going on. I'm liking this.
It is.
Yeah, you know, you talked about a heart moment. So let's come and talk about the School of Marketing and you setting up. You said it took 6 years to get there. Why? Mm. What is it? What did you want to create?
Well, look, I think first of all, and this is really relevant, going back to the conversations about how much me and Mark intertwine in our lives. But actually, it wasn't what I wanted to create; it's what we wanted to create. Because actually, we were sitting at MNC Saatchi one day, in a stolen meeting room, and we were reading Marketing Week together, pondering about the world. And it came to pass that actually a lot of young people were choosing alternative careers other than the one that we loved. And we felt really pissed off, felt pretty bad about it. And we wanted to make a change in that space. And that was very much where we were first coming at this from. And we were thinking about how we could both inspire the next generation to see how good a career they could have it within our space and how perhaps different it was from their perceived expectations of this industry. But also recognizing that we had to do so much more as marketers and champions of our industry to be able to open the doors, make them feel welcome, and want them to arrive and thrive in a space where traditionally they may not have had that opportunity. So it came from that that space. And the small starts as we do was me and Mark go into action mode pretty quickly after kind of feeling our hearts for a while, kind of going, okay, so what are we going to do next? And it was very much galvanizing a few CMOs to want to take charge with us to create an initial sort of version of what it could be. We teamed up with Young Enterprise at the time, and we teamed up with Unilever, who gave us your supply of free ice cream to some young people to create a challenge out of it. And we got 4,000 young people through that experience. Was the beta version, the very small embryonic start of what the School of Marketing became. The only additional component behind that inspiration element from the beginning is we've now transformed very much to kind of take on a new lapse of life, which is sort of the ongoing element from inform to help employ, and then to help inform, sorry, go from inspire to help employ, and then to help inform those young people about what they need to do and help them get to where they need to go once they're in role, which is where the apprenticeship element of what we do comes in and kicks in really well. So, 6 years into the 6 years from the moment I said I wanted to create something like this to the moment I did, and genuinely another 18 months to 2 years from that moment to really understand where we fit in the world as well. So yeah. Long, hard graft and lots of thinking and reflection. But I hope, Mark, we can put our hands up and say we're on the right track now.
Yeah, that's what I love, Richie, is that you see the gap, you spot the gap, and you might want to just share the thing about Afghanistan refugees, just as a tiny example of that sort of spontaneous action. I think that to your credit, Richie, that you took that angst, it's you really, you took the angst of people stumbling into marketing. And in fact, but kind of both of us did too as well. Why is it that such a great career is often a happy accident? Yeah. To create something. And it's a brilliant example of an MVP. People talk about agile and minimum viable products, but Richie has demonstrated how you can take something embryonic and then explode it out into all sorts of avenues and make sense of it along the way. It will all come together, but just that sort of the guts and again, I was going to swear again, but the guts to go for it.
Tell us about Afghanistan, Richie.
Well, Suki, again, moment in time here, right? Looking spread across the news over the last couple of weeks, truly recognizing that there's a population of people who are going to land on our shores and be very unsure about what they're coming into. And at the same time, need to quite quickly get up to speed with the way things are sort of slightly done differently in another context. Basically fit in and be inclusive. And we felt this was a moment in time where we as an industry could come together to really be in kind of almost champion those individuals. So the School of Marketing is now actually offering a free digital skills program for any Afghan refugee who would like to, or is curious about, or wants to reskill or upskill in the area of marketing and digital marketing to try and find home in our industry. We would welcome them with open arms. In addition to that, we also have the UK's largest marketing mentoring program, which happens every Wednesday at 11 a.m. to 12:30, where some of the biggest chief marketing officers in the UK mentor some of the mentees that we have. So by all means, join in that opportunity as well. The whole premise being is we want to create a very inclusive industry, and we want to demonstrate how we can champion that cause. And this is just one small way of being able to do that.
Wow. I love that. And that's an amazing story and a brilliant thing to be doing. One of our team, Bo, is on your program. And I asked her, what was it that she was getting out of it? And she said, she's new. She's a grad from Exeter in history. Marketing, she thought, is the career that she really, really wants. And she said, I felt it was essential that I undertook some form of formal marketing training in order to progress in the industry. It's amazing. And it's giving me so much along the way. And this morning she got a distinction for her piece of work she handed in a couple of weeks ago. She was literally like the smiliest person ever. So, it's fantastic.
Super.
Okay, that's so good to hear. Absolutely. Yeah. Well done, Bo. Well done.
I know. Well done, Bo. And I'm really looking forward to talking to the students this week as well. So let's talk a little bit about your show, you call it. It's not a podcast because we can see the people, and you're hosts of The Places We'll Go. Mark, how did that come about?
Well, I mean, Richie should tell the story, but I'll start and then Richie will fill in the blank. So we noticed that many of the podcasts, live shows, web shows, whatever, in the early days of the pandemic were very much about how brilliant everything was in the world. And the reality was that, well, that wasn't the reality, put it that way. And so we thought we should create something which told the real story of how a lot of people are successful despite their setbacks. And in some cases, because of their setbacks, as opposed to everything's nice and linear. And so really, we wanted to interview people who had had squiggly journeys, but gone on to achieve amazing things. And in that way, it could normalize struggle and people could feel better about the fact that if they had imposter syndrome, if they'd had setbacks, if they'd had failures, that's all part of learning and being successful. But Richie, you should really tell the story.
No, at all. Look, I think you've articulated that beautifully, Mark. I think the one thing that I would just add to it, probably something I'm not really at with you, Mark, either, as maybe some of my embryonic reasons to want to join you every Friday morning, besides the joy of that, of course. there we go. But actually, it was very much at the height of lockdown at that moment in time. And the truth was, I was actually stuck in India for personal reasons. My little girl was born out there because of COVID. And I had no way of getting back. I was stuck through and through. And it was really my way of forging connection, quite frankly. I was feeling really lost, out in a limb. India was going through a severe lockdown as much as anywhere, but maybe slightly worse in the way it was carried out. And I felt really disconnected from the UK and home. And that for me was just a moment in time where I could feel like at least once a week, we could really galvanize a great audience to come on to share shared experiences, have some great people come on. And of course, I would get to spend every Friday with a mentor and friend as well, doing something that we both really enjoyed. So, you know, I think that for me has been, it's been as much as it perhaps has been, as we call it, a proverbial shot in the arm, a positive shot in the arm for people pre-vaccine. It was as much for me as it was for anybody else at that moment in time. So I think
you started the show, Richie, with you in India and Mark, you in the UK.
Yep. And that's what happened.
I didn't realize that.
And the very first episode, by the way, we were very fortunate to have Mark Ritson join the show. Mm-hmm. And actually, I wasn't going to make the first episode because I was actually trying to fly back, at which point I got bumped off the flight the night before, which means I could actually join my first show. But I wouldn't have actually been a part of the first show had it worked out the way I wanted it to. So that's another lesson in, you know, life has other plans.
Absolutely, it always has plans. And look, you know, you've had a bit of a bromance going on throughout this program today. So tell me, Mark, what quality does Richie have that you admire most that you wish you perhaps had?
Well, I've already said it, actually, so it's not a great surprise to say entrepreneurialism, entrepreneurship, being an entrepreneur, all of those things, in terms of seeing opportunities, seeing around corners, and going for things. I've apart from some of my side projects, mainly followed the sort of the good old fashioned greasy pole corporate thing. So all my respect to Richie in terms of he chose to break away from that and has done some amazing things on the back of it. So it would be that entrepreneurship.
And Richie, what about you or Mark?
Well, I think the converse opinion is true, actually. It's funny because we talk about, you know, sometimes you kind of talk about the road less traveled and entrepreneurship has a certain sexiness to it. But actually, quite frankly, you know, 2.5 years into my career at Direct Line, I quit. And actually, Mark has now gone on to be there. Was it 9 years this year, Mark? Was that what it was?
Yeah, approaching 10.
There we go. And I think that comes with, you know, an incredible amount of consistency, persistency. You know, don't underestimate the trials and tribulations of, you know, once managing a huge team. But more so than that, managing an organization at that senior level and actually transforming the way that it operates. You know, those campaigns that have come out of that organization has been incredible and quite the turnaround. I don't know, people perhaps don't know the ins and outs of the Direct Line story, but let me assure you, back in the day when I was there, it was uncertain. And, you know, it's those things that I think for me, you know, really, you know, Mark is the first person that I go to for any piece of major advice that I need. Probably business or personal, and you know that's what I've known because it's, you know, it's not easy to be a CMO in a FTSE 100 company, mm-hmm. or just shy, depending what month that it's in, for just a or coming up to a decade. That's pretty incredible. Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, I think there are two things that always take time. One is relationships, and the second one is your career. And you know, and I think staying in one business for a length of time, you can do all of those things you've talked about. Just there. You know, we talked earlier on about purpose, and purpose is really important because it does link directly to our seven needs of well-being and performance. Mark, how would you articulate what your purpose now is?
Yeah, I mean, it does strongly link to the success and significance thing. Actually, corporately, everybody went through a 3-day retreat thing a few years back to distill theirs. Mine was more of a fine tune. The official words are to help people to achieve increased performance and increased fulfillment. To help people to achieve increased performance and increased fulfillment. The thing being that usually it's seen as a trade-off, and you have to sort of sell your soul, or, you know, you can't have both. And I fundamentally believe that you can. Again, it's the and the hack is quite a simple one. You can have both of those things, mainly by just being really tuned into what it is that you're very good at and doing more of that and sharpening and polishing that, as opposed to getting hung up on the things where you're not so great and you're never going to be. It's the performance and fulfillment thing.
Yeah, I can get that. And just, you know, you talked earlier on about the sprintathon that you've been doing, and that sort of links some of those things outside work. Just tell us very briefly what that was, what it is.
So the sprintathon is 422 people each running 100 metres of 26.2 miles. And Richie's participated in a couple of them. So Richie and I can both say that we've run, you know, some of the fastest marathons in the world ever. But of course, it's a hack, which is the burden is shared. It just goes to show how bloody fast the proper runners actually run. But it means that we can have mass participation sprint marathons. And it's a bit like going back to sports day, but with a cause, as in trying to beat cancer faster. So it is a hack, but I think a good one. And it stood the test of time so far. So far raised just under £750,000. Promised my daughter it would get to £1 million. And Richie was there in the very first one. I still hope we'll get to that milestone.
Brilliant. And sure. Absolutely. I want to do one. I want to be involved next time, Mark. Ask me.
Yeah.
Thank you. Richie, what about you? What's your purpose? How do you describe it?
Do you know, it's funny. Mark is clearly a better marketing man than I am, because he tends to be able to put things more succinctly than I ever could. But perhaps beyond my own purpose, I think the point that Mark made, which is worth reinforcing, is around that you can have both. And by the way, that sometimes comes at risk, and sometimes you got to put yourself on the line to be able to achieve it. But if you're going to fulfill your purpose, and in the context of if you've only got one life, you might as well flip and go for it, right? And try and live it out and try and play it out. And if you don't try and play it out, then what on earth are you doing? And my reflection on that is, you know, having spent a long time in jobs that I hated, with bosses that I couldn't be bothered with, who are truly uninspiring environments in many ways, I just kind of said, I've had enough. And if I'm going to continue to work for my career for the next 30, 40 years, I am genuinely going to give it my best go to do something that I truly love doing day in, day out. And it took so much heartache. I can't tell you, Suki. So many times I didn't know where wage bills were coming from. Can't explain that countless number of times to doing that. But I wouldn't trade it off for anything, because I really feel like I've landed in a space that I could work 24/7, and my wife can attest to this, and I would still be happy, and I would still going to be working around with a skip. And that's what I think is something that everybody should try and aspire to be, inside the corporate world or outside the corporate world, whatever floats your boat. But don't give up that mission of finding it is what you want to do inside of you. Because if you do that, then you're only cheating yourself, because you really do only have one go at this. And it comes with a lot of, it comes with heartache, but it's worth it.
I'm just going to jump in really quickly, Suki. So Richie sent me a pic a couple of weeks back of a framed illustration from his team. So there's lots of faces all illustrated, and it said, to Richie, let me just get it here. Thank you for all the hard work you do to take us into the future. We're very grateful to be part of such an amazing team and are very lucky to have such a fabulous boss. Much love from everyone at the School of Marketing.
That is so lovely, and it absolutely sums you up. Look, we are hurtling towards the end. So I just wanted my last question is, you know, we've talked about resets, we've talked about purpose, but also I'm always interested in how you look after your own well-being, both mentally and physically. Mark, what do you do?
Well, I did share this with you, Suki, a couple of weeks ago, but it might not have stuck. But I'm currently doing the Wim Hof method.
No, well, I thought that you did that. So just to tell everyone, Mark, you are part of a brilliant, I'd say a brilliant book, which I pulled together. That's how I can say it's brilliant, because it has people like you in it sharing your stories of well-being and resilience. And the brilliant Rankin took wonderful photographs. And we went back this month to ask people how you have reset your reset and your own My Reset for this month. And Mark, you did, but tell us what you're now doing.
So Wim Hof is probably better known as the Iceman. It's this somewhat lunatic 60-year-old Dutch fellow who's broken many world records, but mainly around endurance in cold water. And so, yeah, I am cold. It's cold showers. There's a bit of meditation. I've got a nice tub on the way. Everyone in the family looks at me like I'm a bit odd, but there's lots of evidence to suggest that cold water exposure and meditation done the right way has many beneficial effects. And I've had a bad back all through lockdown with a slip disc, and I think it's done more in the last few months than any of the procedures I've had. So I suppose I'm still a convert to the Wim Hof method.
Yeah, that is just so brilliant. As you know, I've spent most of my time in Cornwall. When I spoke to you on your show, I was in Cornwall, and I have taken up for going in the water without a wetsuit for probably the first time in my whole life, having grown up down there. And if you do it every day or really regularly, it's completely fine. If you just try and do it occasionally, it's absolute. Oh, so gold, but brilliant. Richie, what do you do? What do you do to look after your well-being? And
well, I've not been as daring enough to get into cold showers just yet. Although Mark did send me the book, and he was kind of like, "Hey, you got to do this," but I've not had the guts yet. I kind of tried for 1 second, and then back to the hot water. You never know. We'll get there. But actually, I got to admit that actually lockdown had really had a bit of a bad impact on me. And I was really just down in the dumps. I don't know if you could call it mental health issues, but I'm certainly was just not myself. And feeling pretty low about what was going on. It's uncertainty all around. You know, in my line of work, things are, I do get uncertain quite often. And even at home, and I talked about India, et cetera. And what really did help me was, one, talking about it. So I had a range of different sessions with people that really made a difference to kind of change my perspective and come up with an action plan as I'm Mr. Action Oriented and all that stuff. And then I remember, Suki, very distinctly, you and me having a conversation and be going through,
seven needs of well-being.
And actually, I'm really happy to say, genuinely, so on the back of that, I took away need for more exercise, need for more sort of more calming sort of techniques. Not so much, but actually one floated into the other, funny enough. But I now do Zoom classes twice a week with a personal trainer before my kids get up at 6 a.m. And I go to the gym twice a week now as well. So 4 days a week doing that. And I promise you, it has had made such a huge difference. I feel like I'm genuinely back to myself. And it's taken me a good couple of months to feel like that. So, big shout out to you and the method, because it really made a big difference to me personally. And I'll always be grateful for that little moment in time, that spark that you lit that's had a lasting effect.
Oh, well, I'm so pleased, Richie. And do go back, use the app again, because you're nearly 3 months through. So it's, if you keep doing it every quarter, you can then focus on the next thing. Oh, look, Richie, Mark, and what a pleasure to talk to you this morning. I could have talked to you for so much longer. You know, that's the problem with talking to two of you. You just don't get enough time. But I think, you know, we started off about talking about, it's not just about success, it's about significance, and you can do both together. And I think if I take one thing out of this morning, it is both of you have been very successful at what you've done. And Richie, I love the fact that you've shared it's been really hard, because it is doing things that are really different, that are mold breaking, that you've got to start from scratch, can be incredibly hard as well as rewarding. And Mark, you've stayed, you know, at Direct Line, your previous jobs, for a long time. 10 years is a phenomenally long time for CMO, when the average is about 2.5 years. So, you know, and you have both this sense of purpose, but also what an amazing relationship that's endured for the two of you. And it's been lovely. Yeah, just lovely.
They call us the Anthem Deck of Marketing.
You are definitely the Ant and Deck of marketing. Well, so the Ant and Deck of marketing, thank you very much. And I look forward to seeing you again soon. Cheers. Bye.
Thank you, Suki.
Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed Reset the Podcast, I'd love it if you would forward it to your work colleagues, friends, and family. Reset the Podcast is a Let's Reset and Advertising Week global production. Executive producer is Richard Larson, with me, Suki Thompson. Thanks to our sponsor, Liars Non-Alcoholic Spirits, and voiceover artist, Talitha Penny. Music provided by Audio Network.